gentlemen, right there. Beautiful, beautiful afternoon. Welcome to the Painting Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. I'm your co-host, Joe Doherty, who is sponsored by Tony Shuler and Pinnacle Medical Plus. I think summer is, I'm not going to say here to stay, but spring is sure here to stay. I don't think we've got too many more cold days coming, knock on everything.
Let's hope.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. I know we talk a little baseball, we talk a little sports as we get started. But today... And I know this show is airing. It's going to air likely on the 25th, but it's election day in Philadelphia. And by the time the show airs, you know, we'll have our judicial candidates locked in. This is the primary. Voting is such an important part of our rights, and certainly it's great that it's a nice day to get people out there and do their civic duty.
It is. I'm usually early at my polling booth. In fact, I'm typically the first or second person there, a little after 7 a.m. Today I couldn't because I had a hearing at 7:30, so I went at lunchtime. There were literally two other people at the polling booth when I was there.
I got there at... I also typically get there at 7 a.m., mm-hmm. but I didn't get in until 6 a.m. from the bar, Sonny. So just kidding, people. It was same with us.
I'm just hoping that's not, the par for the course. I'm hoping that a lot of people did mail-in ballots and, we have a decent turnout for these candidates.
Yeah, I mean, it's typically... If the race for DA wasn't such a big deal, I think especially coming off of the presidential election and how volatile and passionate that was, but still, we've talked about it many times, running for judge, being a part of the judicial process.
People don't feel as connected to judges for some reason.
They don't yet. It's probably especially having the being a part of jury duty and you'll hear attorneys say that it's the most important thing you can do to be a part of the process.
Sure.
And so
chances are you're more likely to run into a judge or have a judge somehow be part of your life than you are the president.
Or somebody
part of the legislature.
Absolutely. And we had the opportunity of interviewing Tamika Lane for Superior Court.
We did.
What an incredible person.
Very incredible. I mean, she's phenomenal. I was very impressed.
Yeah. I mean, and to me, having that opportunity fired me up. I said to my wife today when we came out of the booth, I feel good. I'm just happy that I was able to vote and do my duty and just be a part of the process. You're right. Hopefully other people feel the same way. Get out there and be, because I always say, don't complain if you don't participate.
Definitely.
So we have a phenomenal show today.
We do.
And we've got a phenomenal doctor on the program. If you would, Sonny, introduce our guest.
Sure. Dr. Sam Gradofsky is with us again today. Dr. Gradofsky was previously on the show in January of this year. Dr. Gradofsky is an exceptional pain specialist who I've known for years. He has improved the health and quality of life of many of my workers' compensation clients. Dr. Gradofsky's practice is called Philadelphia Smart Pain and Wellness. His main office is on Bala Avenue in Bala Kenwood, Pennsylvania, not too far from City Line Avenue. He operates his own surgery center at that location. He also has an office in Northeast Philadelphia and in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Dr. Gradofsky performs all types of pain management procedures, including injections, medication management, sympathetic nerve blocks, physical therapy, etc. Dr. Gradofsky is a double board-certified pain specialist, which puts him in an elite group of pain doctors who are certified to do the more sophisticated pain management procedures. What separates Dr. Gradofsky from other pain specialists besides his double board certification is the fact that he invested the resources to build his own surgery center so his patients can receive the more sophisticated pain procedures right at his office in a hospital-type setting. My clients also comment that Dr. Gradofsky truly listens to their problems, whether they be physical or mental, and he's willing to do whatever is necessary to solve their problems. Dr. Gradofsky, if you would, again, please tell our listeners about yourself and about your medical practice.
Thanks for having me again. It's a pleasure talking to you guys. It is a beautiful day out. I actually was able to fill up this the little blow up swimming pool with my kids. That was a lot of fun.
It is fun. It's a great sign.
So you know, family is important to me. My wife works with me in the practice. I have a small practice. I'm a solo practitioner. Small doesn't mean losing quality of care. It means attention to detail, attention to you, attention to the patient, who we treat like family. My office manager has her daughter and sister, daughter-in-law working with her. So we really try to promote that family experience, family environment in my practice, and bringing it to doing the right thing. And, you know, everything works out. You know, I feel like we have the flexibility to meet the needs of our patients, whatever they are, whatever's causing their pain. And that's our foundation. That's, you know, why I enjoy working, you know, with you and with your clients.
Listen, it's definitely worked for you. I mean, you're successful. And I think in any business, medicine included, quality over quantity is better.
Sure.
Well, also, in a hospital setting, I was in the hospital a couple years ago, and I'll never forget. First of all, they were waking me up to give me a sleeping pill. That's number one. I couldn't sleep. I hadn't slept in 10 days because of the infection in my knee. I got in there, and it was nuts. But I remember thinking to myself, after the fifth person kind of interviewed me and asked the same information, I'm like, oh, my God, these people are not – these. First of all, they're in different departments.
Sure.
But my point is there's less in between yourself as the medical provider and the patient itself. And so there's a direct, you know, relationship. Or, you know, you have them at the, the surgery center. That's got to be a big help, not only for you, but for the patient, because it's not as many layers in between you.
That's what drives me. That's what has inspired me to one of the reasons to go into pain management, to build a long-term relationship with my patients, to know my patients, to go on that journey. And, you know, I don't have shareholders for like a bigger institution, and I don't have this throng of in and out students working underneath me like you have in the academic centers. You have me, and you have my staff who's constant,
and the boss,
and
your wife.
And my wife.
we talked about that before.
Absolutely.
I had a boss one time. Yeah. We worked together for about a week. I'll never forget that. I'll never forget. We were at a restaurant. Yeah. And I'm sitting there talking to one of our managers. And I'm like, I'm talking to him. His name is Mike McDonald. And she looked at me right in the middle of it. She went, Joe, is that really necessary? And I went, I guess not. But, in your situation, you have, you know, obviously you have a great cohesion.
Yeah, she doesn't slam on the brakes, but she does decelerate a little bit, and that's important.
She will be listening to this podcast.
So yes,
I don't want you to forget about that.
No, and surprisingly, the last podcast she was encouraging, and that was a first.
Right. No, I hear you. I've gotten some strongly worded messages on political podcasts that I had done. Well, they weren't podcasts; they're live on the air. But the point is, it's a family atmosphere that you have there,
yes.
And that has to catch on with the patients, because obviously when they come there, you know, they're scared that, you know, they may be coming in. You know, talk about the it's pain management itself. What's the definition of pain management?
Sure. That's a really good question, and it's somehow,
hold on. Tell him, Sonny.
Yeah, this is your.
You're going to get used to it.
Yeah, Joe loves it when you tell him that he's got a good question.
Get used to it, all right, Doc? But thank
sure.
You. So go ahead.
I hope I can give a good answer, but it's a common introduction that I make to the patients.
Sure.
Hi, my name is Dr. Gradovsky. I'm a pain management doctor. Pain management, you know, sometimes it has connotation, pain pill prescriber, or something like that, you know, or just needles. So the way I explain it is, my background is in anesthesiology, and I subspecialize in pain medicine. My focus is to discover the underlying problem that's causing your pain, My philosophy is to promote conservative approaches, conservative strategies to help you address the underlying problem. And I use different approaches, techniques in a multidisciplinary, multimodal approach to help decrease pain, to then promote the ways of addressing, getting stronger, promoting the natural healing. And in my background, if these conservative approaches don't work, I have the knowledge, the background of determining who needs surgical care or more invasive care.
So having said that, it's a very well-rounded and it's almost like a holistic approach at looking at an injury. We just had a new guest walk into the studio. at Peter, yeah, so right there. How's that? And move it right over, right. Perfect. So, having said that, so we've got a lot of great professionals on the broadcast, and so what we're going to do is segue a little bit, and Sam, if you will, introduce Sam Gradovsky.
I knew what you meant, Joe.
You got me, Sonny.
I can try the introduction.
Introduce our guest, please.
Peter Pulaski just joined us. Peter was last on the show in August of 2020. Peter Pulaski is a young associate at the renowned law firm of Saltz, Mongoluzzi and Bendesky, which is main office at One Liberty Place, 52nd floor here in Philadelphia. Peter has been with the firm since March of 2018. He represents clients who suffered catastrophic personal injuries in a variety of ways. Peter has extensive trial experience, having worked for a large firm for several years doing litigation before coming to Saltz, Mongoluzzi and Bendesky. Peter Pulaski is a Philadelphian through and through. He grew up in Delaware County as a graduate of Temple and then got his law degree from the Beasley School of Law, Temple. In law school, he served as the editor of the Law Review, and he completed Temple's prized advanced trial advocacy program. Needless to say, Peter Pulaski has the skills to battle and defeat large corporations, municipalities, and insurance companies who are negligent. And Peter, if you would, tell us again about your background and about your law firm.
Good afternoon, guys. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on again. Happy election day to everybody. I see a couple of voting stickers here. I voted stickers. Happy to see that.
Right.
Always good.
We're just talking about it.
Yeah, it's a big year. A lot of big things going on this year. I know I've been...
And some important ballot questions that we didn't mention.
Yeah. No question about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, very important
stuff. And we talked about, the fact that it's, although it's a primary, we have great judicial candidates, number one, and it's a very important DA's race. So there was, hopefully... we'll get a nice turnout, especially when everybody gets home from work. So.
Yeah, sure. I know at the firm we've been, back in Judge McLaughlin for the Supreme Court, really a big key race for the state. It'd be, really great for
Labor's
Pennsylvania.
And Labor's also supporting her, so we've been pumping her pretty huge.
Yeah, she's a very, very smart, very well-qualified judge. Happy to see her doing well.
Absolutely. And we got some great candidates across the board. So tell us a little bit about what you do at Mongoluzzi and about your career.
Sure. Yeah. So again, my name is Pete Pulaski. I'm an attorney. I've been with Saltz Mongoluzzi for a little over 3 years right now. I've got experience in, typically what we do, most of what we do at the firm is representing people who are injured at work in it's called a third party case, which is after workers' compensation case. So your workers' compensation case gets you compensation for your injuries from your employer, from their workers' comp insurance carrier. A lot of our cases are against the other parties that might be responsible. So, if it's a construction site injury, it might be another contractor on the site who is responsible for the accident that caused the injury. Or if there's a defective product, defective manufacturer, something like that involved, we'd file suit against the manufacturer of the defective product.
No question about it. And Sonny, obviously, if it's a third-party case, what's unique about a third-party case is the parties at this table right now typically work together in that type of situation.
We
a
do.
Lot of times, Sonny, it comes to you first.
We all collaborate, share information. And generally, the workers' compensation case is the case that does finish first, either through the payment of weekly or biweekly wage loss checks or the settlement of the workers' compensation case. And once the comp case is resolved, that's when the third party case will kick in.
Yeah, and so if you get a what's the process in vetting that for to find out there could be a third party here, because in the state of Pennsylvania and right across the board, when somebody gets injured on a job, typically it's work comp and they cannot sue their employer. A third party case demonstrates that there's other negligence involved. And how do you go about vetting that process?
Well, as Peter said, if there's somebody else at the construction site other than the employer that caused the injured worker's injury, then you would have a third party claim against that other entity. You can't sue your employer for anything other than workers' compensation as a result of a work injury. But if there is a third party that actually caused or was responsible for the injury, you can file a personal injury claim against that third party in addition to getting comp from your employer.
So, Peter, when you get that call, what's the process? In other words, there's evidence there. How do you roll with that, and how do you address it?
We work with a lot of workers' comp attorneys, like Sonny, who are really on top of this issue and know what to look for as far as what other potential, parties might be responsible. But sometimes it's not completely obvious. I'll give you a good example. I literally just came out, and I was a little bit late today. I apologize. I was finishing up a deposition.
Well, hold on. You work at a big firm. You're on top of Liberty One. You can show up whenever you want. Go ahead.
I know that's not true. But I was working on a case today. Just came out of a deposition. It was a woman who was working at the Philadelphia airport. And she's a baggage loader loading baggage from an aircraft to the ground. She's a fleet officer. And in this particular accident, she's loading baggage onto one of these mobile belt loaders. It's basically a conveyor belt on a truck you might see driving around the tarmac there.
Sure.
And she's loading the baggage onto the belt loader. And while she's loading the baggage on, she falls. She falls and she falls down out of the aircraft onto the tarmac below.
Oh, wow.
The belt of the aircraft is pretty high off the ground, 6-7 feet. So that's a big fall. It's a bad accident.
Sure.
Of course, she had a workers' comp case after that. And now we've got a case against the manufacturer of the belt loader just because, they've been making these belt loaders since the 70s, same way they've always made them, with no guardrails, no guard in there, nothing to protect people from falling when they're using the belt loader. And this is the way they've always made them, even though people have fallen before. This has happened before. They knew it. And, we're basically pursuing this case to try to make the product safer, to make sure they put the guardrails on there to keep people from falling out over and over again.
And that's where change happens in the courtroom.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that there is almost infuriating because I'm sure it's happened a number of times. When you're dealing with the medical part of that, Sonny, how does it coordinate between a third party attorney and firm and yourself? They get a work injury, they come to you, at what point does Dr. Godofsky get involved?
Well, generally, since the comp case starts first, I'm able to get the client to a doctor either, right after the injury or right after the 90-day period is exhausted. If the employer gave the injured worker a list of panel doctors and had the injured worker sign a 90-day notice, then they have to treat with the company doctor for the first 90 days or until discharge. But once that period expires, I can then get the client to a doctor who's going to have their back as opposed to the employer's interest, and that's where Dr. Godofsky comes in.
So there are some implications with this workers' compensation and third-party scenario. I had a patient a year and a half ago, similar employment. She was working at the airport. She suffered a fall at work that wasn't necessarily the employer's fault. There was a third party involved that was involved in the injury. She treated with the panel doctors for a period of time. It was a pretty severe injury. She had shoulder surgery through the company doctors. Was still having severe pain traveling down her hand. So she comes to me several months later. And with my evaluation, I wasn't totally convinced that it was a shoulder injury, that the neck was involved, and the neck was the responsible source of her underlying pain. Now, with workers' compensation, in the first, there is a accepted injury, a description of the injury, and the way that the doctor's supposed to treat, is what injuries define. Now, there are some legal approaches that they can file to include and extend the injury, but in this case, it was pretty problematic of adding that injury. So I was able to actually treat her neck issue because the third party was involved, and I was able to work with her, conclude that workers' compensation component and then keep on providing ongoing care, and she's still a patient in my practice because of her severe neck pain and ultimately required surgery, and she's doing better, but she still has chronic issues.
Right, and that's the issue that you have with the panel doctors, because they're so focused on the accepted injury, the injury that's identified in the notice of compensation payable, which is the document that initiates the claim, that accepts the claim in Pennsylvania. And they don't look for, sources of the problem outside of that accepted injury, when oftentimes there are other issues. And again, that's another reason why I want to get the injured worker to, Dr. Gradovsky or some other physician that I know is going to have their back as quickly as possible.
How many people try to navigate the injury themselves? You know, the process, okay? They don't even know that their injury that is, like the doc said, their neck, which is where that particular pain was coming from, they may not even know that that's not the accepted injury of the work comp doctor.
Right, and a lot of my clients, are afraid to rock the boat because they've, been with the employer for a long time, they've got a great job, it's got great benefits, and they've had a decent relationship with the employer before their work injury, but as soon as the work injury happens, everything changes. It's all about, dollars and cents as far as the insurance carrier is concerned, and the insurance carrier is focused on trying to get that person back to work as quickly as possible and not identifying the true source of their pain.
Peter, talk about the communication between yourself and Sonny Banks, a workers' compensation attorney. What are the issues people have with their attorneys? One of the stereotypical issues people have with an attorney who's not a good attorney is their lack of communication. That goes the same for attorneys. You need to have a seamless relationship with the work injury attorney, because there's a lot going back and forth and a lot that can affect your case.
Yeah, that's I can't stress the importance of that enough, just having the communication between the client and the workers' comp attorney, and then also the third-party attorney, our firm, just basically to get information about everything, whether it's information about the facts of the accident that were taken when the accident happened, the facts of medical care that happened in the very beginning, just to get as much information as we can from the client, workers' comp attorney. The stronger that relationship is between the three, the three main players there, it's going to be, better for the case, certainly.
Seamless. That's what it has to be. One of the benefits of Saltz Mongoluzzi is the resources. We know this is a small community, and from what I hear, insurance companies know who's settling, who wants to, run and settle real quick, and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. And obviously, having those resources, how does that impact your case, particularly when they know you're willing to go to distance?
Yeah, that's what we've seen played out the last year, honestly, because I don't know if you know this, but courts have been shut down
right
since last March. And just now, Philadelphia County is getting back to doing trials. And in our kinds of cases, the case settles when you're staring down a trial date. So if you don't have a trial date, the insurance company sees that as an excuse to basically sit on their hands, make no offer. Exactly. They keep the money in the bank account. They don't do anything. And so that puts a lot of pressure on, us and also the clients to take a smaller sum than they would have otherwise.
So you can give them a call now and go, by the way, Bob, my turn, and then click up, and click the phone.
Exactly, yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, we're back in the courtroom now,
courts
so that's
are
always
open
good.
Again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did I mention the courts are open again? But I'm trying to remember when we had Peter on. Was it by phone?
Yeah, it was by phone.
Because it was... There's no way I would have had somebody this tall as him on the program. I told you, all the guests have to be no taller than 5'11", Sonny. This is ridiculous. It's interesting because we had Bob Mongoluzzi on a broadcast. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a building tradesman, so an iron worker. Mm-hmm. And ironically speaking, it was very interesting. I did not know this, but the first big case that they had was the Tropicana, the collapse of the stair tower.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And he said that, and so my father used to, who's our union leader, used to send the cases to Mongoloosi, even if they were work comp cases, because we had so many catastrophic injuries. The guy's name was Mike Whitland, mm-hmm. and Mike was my foreman when I worked as an iron worker on the Frankfort L. I was active, I guess, 20 years, and what a nice guy. Phenomenal guy, funny guy. Was working in the Tropicana in the stair tower, and the whole thing collapsed.
Wow.
And it was an emotional show because, I wasn't aware from that, but Bob had told me that. Having those resources, having that credibility, you talk about attorneys like Sonny Banks, mm-hmm. When it's a personal injury case, and Sonny, you want to be able to refer that case to somebody you know is going to be able to go the distance. How important is that?
Oh, it's very important. I mean, especially when you're talking about a catastrophic injury, because, you know, there are a lot of personal injury firms in Philadelphia that, dabble in personal injury.
Yeah.
But they don't know how to handle the more serious cases. And in order to protect my clients, rights, I want to make sure that they're with the right law firm. And in a catastrophic injury situation, Peter's firm is the firm that I look to.
No doubt. We've had discussions. I think that what we were talking about was the duck boat.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I, at one point, I guess years ago, I was wondering, well, how does a case in, where was that at?
Missouri.
Missouri, yeah. End up with a Philadelphia law? The attorneys out there refer the case. How much of your caseload and the firms is from other attorneys that are sending cases over that they know that you would do a more efficient job?
A large portion. I would venture to guess the vast majority of our cases are cases that other attorneys got and then referred to our firm just because the firm's name is so well known and the reputation is so well known. Mm-hmm. And Bob and Larry, they've built just such a great firm, so many dedicated attorneys, just known for doing a really good job.
And actually, those referring attorneys are doing their clients a service because you want to make sure that your client is with the right firm that's going to maximize their recovery.
No question about it. Culture at the firm. Talk about that. I know it's a round the clock. In other words, it's not a 9-to-5 firm. I'm pretty sure we've had that conversation. Probably could stop by and see Peter on a Sunday afternoon on occasion. What's the culture like? Talk about that.
Yeah, and the culture is hardworking, of course, and hard charging. The reason why people refer us or attorneys refer us their cases is because they know that the culture of the firm is that we're going to look at any case that comes from every angle. We try our hardest not to ever, turn down a case or reject a case because we don't think there's a case there. We look at every angle and try to see what's there and try to, really think creatively to see how we can maximize a recovery for the client and get the best recovery for the client in every single case.
Talk about some of the important cases that you've been a part of and that have inspired you. We do something called Case Watch. There's often been situations. We've had, individuals on who were, even if they were, we had some great female attorneys on and they were underestimated. Those stories are awesome. When they're sitting there and they have the big corporation right there.
Yeah.
There are some attorneys that sit there and say and some people will say that when Saltz Mongoloosi has a case, it's not really David versus Goliath. Probably not even money, but it's got to be great to be in that situation. But talk about some of the important cases that you've been, apprised of since you've been there.
I mean, a lot of cases. I'm trying to think of something in particular right now. Right now, I'm very busy with a case involving a woman who was hit by a car in Pittsburgh. This particular woman, she was in Pittsburgh to watch her daughter's volleyball tournament. She was an elementary school gym teacher up in State College. She was actually an assistant coach of the Penn State team. Very athletic, very nice woman, just really great woman in Pittsburgh to watch her daughter's volleyball game. And as she's crossing the street, she gets hit by a car driven by a commercial driver. I can't say who the company was.
Yeah, of course not.
But you know, completely, you know, ruined her life. You know, suffered a very bad brain injury, bad back injury, shoulder injury. Like I said, she had been athletic her whole life. You know, Division I athlete, continued to be an athlete. You know, ran marathons, was, you know, participating in her daughter's volleyball career, softball career, things like that. Now she can't even leave her house. She hasn't worked since the accident. Can't play sports anymore. Can't do anything like that. You know, and then looking at the culpability of the defendant, this particular driver, when they were hired by this company, within a week of being a driver of this company, this driver had ran through a stop sign and T-boned another car, sent himself to the hospital, sent the other driver to the hospital. Within a month, you know, so after that, he ran over one of his passengers' feet. Within a month after that, he was discovered to be stalking one of his passengers. And then now we are 6 months later, since he was first hired, that this accident happened with my client. You know,
it's amazing that an employer would put up with an employee like that.
Can we get the Auburn City HR department at the company?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's unthinkable that they would let this guy behind the wheel of a vehicle that can do that kind of damage to a person.
Yeah, I mean, it's
just unthinkable.
Yeah, it is. And you know, people's lives, like you said, that woman's life is never going to be the same. And I guess life's pleasures in that situation, this woman was all about her health.
Yeah.
Doc, if you would, since Peter just, you know, came into the broadcast, talk a little bit, your pain management specialist, talk a little bit about your practice and the individuals, because you also treat catastrophically injured individuals.
I do. Yeah, it's wonderful to be in my situation because I get to see the story behind the injured person. And when working with these larger, more complex catastrophic injury cases, it's a lot different than kind of the run-of-the-mill, I hurt my back for 5 weeks, you know, doc, get me better, you know. And this is more complicated injuries. And one of my expectations from a patient is make me better. And, you know, we don't have to be that academic. I just want to feel better. And so a lot of pain management doctors, we focus on doing things rather than discovering and describing things, describing the actual injury. And so in working with attorneys, particularly with third party, also workers' comp, particularly the catastrophic, you know, I see injuries that are a little bit more involved, more complicated, less common. And so I have to work harder to get to the diagnosis. I have to work finding harder to get the objective diagnostic information that, you know, isn't just going to come from a regular routine MRI. So I feel it's made me a better doctor. It's made me invest more time in my continuing education, my background, networking with other providers. So right now, some of the subspecialties within pain management include complex regional pain syndrome, brachial plexus injuries, and pain after spine surgery. And these are three specific disease entities, three specific conditions that are a little bit more challenging to define. It's more than just, I hurt my back, I herniated a disc. This is, there's a lot more digging that I have to do as a doctor. And I've aligned myself with other surgeons and other specialists where not only do we feel comfortable doing the studies to bring this up, but also not being overwhelmed by the care and the resource-intensive care that they require. And, you know, working in an environment where we have the physical therapy, we have the surgery care, and we have the medical care, you know, it really provides a nice synergy with the firm.
When you're dealing with a situation like that, Doc, and Peter, sounds obvious. I mean, obviously a catastrophic injury. So having said that, a lot of issues can happen. You know, we've talked to the doctor before, but pain management gives the person an opportunity to have so many different ways to attack that pain without obviously dealing with addiction, like heavy narcotics on a constant basis.
Or having to undergo the knife again. I mean, yeah. I can't tell you how many of my comp clients have had multiple back surgeries without any significant relief. What are they going to do? Undergo another one and experience the same kind of pain? No, that's ridiculous.
And it's obviously, and we're not getting detailed, Peter, but what an injury like that, and I know that you're dealing with, and the firm is dealing with, injuries and catastrophic injuries and wrongful death suits, obviously when that phone rings. And it's an attorney, and it's another attorney who's probably already vetted the case, so you know it's typically not good news. Is it important for you and dealing with the medical side? And I know there are a lot of them are coming from hospitals, but long-term treatment care to make sure that if you're going to direct somebody, it's going to be with a doctor that's going to not obviously benefit them, but watch every aspect, including the fact that long-term medication sometimes can hurt, they're not healthy to different organs, and addiction can happen within a week. It's hard enough for somebody emotionally to be dealing with the injury and the pain, but then having those other aspects there, do you take kind of pride in making sure that you direct them in the right way? Because, I'm sure there are people out there that don't have that network and just send them, go to your family doctor. Well, that could be the biggest mistake in the world, if they don't have the right professional looking at the whole holistic approach to their injury.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree wholeheartedly. It's all tied together. And, a lot of these more complex injuries require more complex treatment farther in the future. And, you talked about the addiction to drugs. I mean, that's, narcotics. I mean, that's a really terrible side effect of injuries like these. And I've had clients who have had trouble getting off of narcotics. And, we work with them to try to find them solutions for that. And just also having the client who goes to a good physician, a comparable physician who knows how to, treat them into the future and take care of them in the future is important for the case too, honestly, because, a lot of times our cases might be getting to deposition and trial years after the accident. And the worst thing you'd want to have if you're a person who has a personal injury suit is, you wouldn't want to be in pain for the last couple of years and not have anyone to go to. And now the defendants, you'd be surprised, even in our catastrophic cases, defendants still trying to minimize these injuries.
Oh, yeah.
They still try to say, he's only been the doctor once in the last year.
Right.
He can't be that hurt.
Well, right.
They don't know what you're going through.
Yeah.
They can't see it. They can't experience it. And, the way that, we channel that is through the physicians.
And even with surgery, some point the surgeon is going to wash their hands and say, I can't do any more for you.
Yeah.
And then, a year or two down the road when you're about ready to settle the third party case, Peter's right. The defense is going to say, you can't be that hurt if you haven't treated in the last, couple of years.
Yeah. Doc, having said that, looking at the injury from all angles and you talk about the different modalities and the different treatments that you can provide that attack an injury and also you're able to quarterback a case so that you're looking out for not only the injury, the recovery and all that, but also the long-term health of that individual and their psyche as well.
It's one of the advantages that I have is that I don't have a agenda from a medical standpoint. My goal is to create a home for the patient. My goal is to understand what the patient's needs, understand the totality of how they're hurting, understanding my limitations, and then personalizing that care experience in my practice. So I mentioned I do philosophically promote conservative care. I offer physical therapy in my office. We emphasize exercise. But I also do injections under X-ray guidance and ultrasound. A lot of times steroids, but also other types of procedures that are injections. And one of my passions and what I'm good at is other type of surgical procedures where I can perform what's called a spinal cord stimulator implant, which is a type of device that treats pain that is a very cutting edge, highly researched, very effective treatment that avoids a deeper spine surgery or orthopedic surgery. But at the same time, I'm of the the approach where if they need that orthopedic surgery and it's early on and it's appropriate, I'm very supportive, and I have a network of patients that I refer to, and you know, they would be in good hands. So I'm not trying to define, you have this injury, you need this procedure, I'm going to do that procedure, and then in 6 weeks, I'm done with your care. I'm defining, this is what your injury is, these are treatment options, I'm going to do my best, and I'll still be there no matter what to help you at all stages of your care.
Sonny, I've said this many times. I had an infection in my knee, and the doctor gave me Dilaudid. I don't even take baby aspirin, right? I was on cloud 20, right? Wow. After 4 days, and this is somebody, I could not sleep without it.
Wow.
And it gave me an empathy. Okay, so I was able to say, listen, enough of that. Don't we have anything stronger? I'm just kidding. But what I mean by that is, somebody who doesn't, I mean, I've never even tried marijuana, right? And I could see, and it gave me an empathy for how quickly somebody could get in trouble. So you're managing that process, knowing that somebody's walking a tightrope in some cases when their pain is so brutal. And, you know,
But what's interesting about it is that it's not easy for Dr. Gradovsky or other pain specialists to manage a patient's care, because you have insurance companies saying, no, I'm not going to pay for this spinal cord stimulator, even though the spinal cord stimulator would take or get the patient off of a lot of these opioid medications. It shocks me every day when I have my clients call and say, listen, I can't get this spinal cord stimulator when I know it will help me.
Yeah, yes. Talk about that, Doc. I mean, you've dealt with all kinds of individuals, even people coming from, I mean, with the insurance companies, and even people coming from panel doctors. I mean, you know, it's got to, you know.
It's short-sightedness, right?
It really is.
And because obviously the reason why they're interfering with my relationship, interfering with my care, is to save money, right? Mm-hmm. But they're saving money that week or that month, and instead they're going to be paying month after month after month, increased dose, and then paying for the medication to treat the side effects to that medication ongoing. So it really is short-sighted. It's hard. It's why I'm lucky that I don't know any better. I'm a younger physician. I'm not 40 years old yet, so I don't remember how it used to be.
Well, you look
used
at that, you, have, not your, that you have your own practice, yes. That you have your own surgery center, and that you can call the shots.
Correct. So I can do what's right, but I only know fighting with insurance companies. And one of the problems that a lot of doctors told me when I was up and coming was, don't do medicine. It's a nightmare. It used to be so much better. So now I don't know what it's like, you know, to have this freedom.
So you're practice. Used to the fight.
Yeah, I'm used to the fight. And so I have resources, I have staff. And so it's not as, so we know how to navigate the system as best as you can in this environment, still provide very quality care, still try to lessen the blow to the patient when we are getting these initial denials, because we'll fight.
Because I understand it, especially with the spinal cord stimulator, is it has to be done in a hospital setting. And doctors who don't have their own surgery center have to do it at a hospital. Well, the hospital wants pre-approval of that procedure before they'll agree to allow the doctor to do it, because the doctor doesn't have his own surgery center where he can do it there, you know, based on his own choice, his own decision. So, you know, that's where I think Dr. Gadowski has a benefit.
And
long term, Peter, sometimes the client, you know, setting expectations at the beginning, okay, that's amazes me, especially knowing that at Salts Mangalusi, any given day could be a meeting with a family who just lost somebody, any given day, okay, at a catastrophic injury.
Yeah,
you know, and it's the same, you know, at this table right here. It always amazes me. An attorney said to me last week, in fact, he's a judge candidate, and I was doing a podcast with him.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting, he said, I'm not sure if I should be proud or not of what I do. I looked at him, and I said, what are you talking about? I said, and I'm going to say this to you, you give people hope, and you're not charging money out of your pocket. In other words, there's no out-of-pocket expenses. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so you're basically investing into it. Same with you, Doc. You, mm-hmm. If you take cases, if they're denied or disputed,
correct.
And if it wasn't for individuals like the people at this table, they would not have. Sonny, I know workers' comp. You're not holding. You know, literally speaking, when somebody comes in. Thank God you're not doing federal workers. My God.
No, my clients don't pay anything up front. All the costs are paid by my firm, whether we win or lose.
And so having said that, Peter, to setting expectations at the beginning, because this could be a rocky road.
Yeah.
And the person that you're dealing with it on day one, who's already in trouble, yeah. Who would probably love to go back to work, except for one thing, they can't walk. Now they're going to have to deal with the insurance companies and all those things. How do you set expectations at the beginning?
Yeah, well, I mean, we'd be completely honest with them about, you know, the strength or weaknesses of what we see in the case, and also that we don't know what's going to happen in the future. You know, that we tell them we're going to be there for them, and we're going to, you know, walk them through the case and make sure that, you know, we deal with the insurance companies, we do negotiate on their behalf, you know, we do all the hard work for them in the case. And they, you know, we'll always be communicative, always keep in touch with them, make sure they know what's going on.
Doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, it doesn't happen overnight. Exactly. Yeah, a lot of times, I mean, and the bigger cases, more complex cases take longer. You know, even things like a car accident now can take, you know, a year or more just to get to a resolution if there's, you know, a lot of pushback from the other side. Certainly the last year with COVID has extended that even more, and that's been the most frustrating thing. I had a couple cases that were ready to go to trial, and they were going to trial. They were just about to go to trial last spring, and then court shut down. It was literally the week before, and then we had to wait an entire year just to get the case positioned back where it was before. So, you know, I'm so thankful that we're getting through this, and now, you know, people are getting vaccinated. We can get the courts back open and get things moving again, and, you know, get settlements going and get trials going again.
Where is the jury system now at this point?
They're doing a lot more cases now, the civil juries, than they were before. I think Philadelphia is doing about, they're listing about 40 to 50 cases a month, and they're doing about a dozen. So 30 of them are settling before trial, right. And then they're actually putting on about a dozen trials a month. So
yeah, COVID has been, it's ravaged a lot of industries, but because of technology, the legal profession, especially in injury area, it's stayed pretty much intact. Of course, the jury system has been, but it's coming back. Talk about that. Talk about the new normal.
Yeah, the new normal. I mean, so apart from trials, everything else has gone faster, which has been good for us. I mean, things like depositions and just getting things moving, you know, doing Zoom and things over the internet, it's made everything easier and smoother and faster. So a lot of other aspects of cases are moving quicker.
Yeah, everybody's schedule has opened up. You don't have to worry about people, you know, flying in and making travel arrangements. I agree.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the parts of it other than trial are moving faster now, and that's great for our clients, because if a case is in a position where can settle without a trial, then it can potentially move faster.
What do you feel is going to stick around, you know, as far as technology and you know, dealing with, you know, the depositions? I've heard people, and Sonny, you talked about having to travel over to Wilkes-Barre, but now you don't have to because, you know, you can do it by Zoom.
Some people don't like Zoom depositions. I personally do, just because I've noticed that the witnesses, a lot of times they're at home, and they seem to be more comfortable and more at ease. And so I can get them to admit things that they might not admit otherwise. Like, you know, they're at home, they might be in their pajamas or just something. They're kind of more.
We've heard stories, and we've heard nightmare stories where people forgot they were on Zoom and, you know, walking around, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there was one teacher where the kid, they had a toy gun in the background. I don't know if you heard that. But
oh, no, I remember
It was a toy gun in the school district.
Or they have a friend or family member in the background coaching them.
Yeah, right.
In terms of what to say.
In your world. Doc, talk about telemedicine.
Sure.
Is it something that you have delved into?
Well, I, being in my smaller practice, I was able to adjust very quickly. It was, I stopped seeing patients for a day and a half, and I was able to adjust pretty quickly to telemedicine early on about a year and a half ago. I still incorporate telemedicine, and it's convenient. It's convenient for the patients. a fair amount of my work is also testifying on behalf of my patients to, you know, advocate and communicate the nature of the injury. And that has also been a more friendly environment. There's no rushing to get to that. And that's helped with patient hours as well, because I'm now more available. A lot of what I do is procedural, as I sort of mentioned. So I do spend 5 days a week in the office face-to-face with patients, and I have staff providing a lot of the telemedicine care.
And you've done that throughout COVID.
I've done that throughout COVID. So that's been a really nice transition. Patients like it. You know, they request, you know, I'm pretty much fully booked with telemedicine. It's nice. I don't think it's as good of care, though. I think my connections have suffered. I think my ability to problem solve. So that's been my overall assessment of it, that I don't think it provides, from what I do, which is very hands-on, physical, and creating that trust and connection. I think that there's some issues there.
When we talk about the insurance companies, Peter, have they tried to take advantage of situations when there were no trials scheduled? So now they're lowballing clients and trying to obviously settle this thing out, get it off the books, but doing it at a much lower rate than they obviously would have if they knew they had a jury trial coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. I think of one case in particular I had where it was a New Jersey case, and New Jersey has taken a different approach. They're actually doing trials over Zoom now.
Which I've heard something about that.
Jury trials?
Yeah, jury trials over Zoom, where they're going to have the judge on a Zoom call, the attorneys in their offices on a Zoom call, and they're actually going to deliver a tablet to each member of the jury in their home to watch the jury on a tablet.
What's the defense's disposition when it comes to depositions, even with doctors and with the plaintiff? What is their disposition when it comes to, you know, doing Zoom depositions?
Typically, they want to do it in person, no matter what. And at the very beginning of this, we had a lot of defense attorneys trying to require us to come to in-person depositions. And, you know, we've obviously got a lot of clients who have, you know, their health has been impacted already. You know, they're weakened, you know, health state. We said, no way, no how. We're not coming out in person, you know, with the pandemic going on. But anyway, in this case, we were listed for a Zoom trial in New Jersey, and the defense wanted no part of a Zoom trial where they're going to have, you know, the jury with a tablet right in front of them to be able to see all the evidence right in front of them, right in their face. So they settled that case quickly after that.
Absolutely. Listen, it's been a fast hour. A very interesting broadcast. Peter, if you will, contact information at the firm if anybody wants to get in touch with you.
Yeah, my contact information is on our website, www.smbb.com. Again, my name is Peter Veloski. That's V-E-L-O-S-K-I. Or you can just find me on the website. Our firm, you know, phone number is listed there. My email is on there, too. If there's anything we can do to help or even any questions, feel free to give me a call or send me an email.
Awesome. Doc, if you will, your contact information.
So my name is Dr. Samuel Gradovsky. My practice is Philadelphia Smart Pain and Wellness. We have offices in Ballard-Kinwood, Allentown, Northeast Philly. Website's www.phillysmartpain.com. And our number is 215-366-2803.
All right. Sonny Banks, take us home.
Banks Law, 215-561-1000. And our web address is www.bankslaw.com.
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Pain in Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. Sonny's guests have been Dr. Sam Gradovsky and Peter Veloski. And we've had a phenomenal show. We're sponsored by Tony Shuler and Pinnacle Medical Plus. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. For Sonny Banks, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening.
Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com. Suffering a work injury or any type of personal injury can be a painful and traumatic experience. What can make it even more difficult for a patient is trying to navigate and find the quality medical care they need for their particular injury. Healthmark Enterprises is a full-service medical coordination and marketing company started in 1994 by CEO Robin Lewison that takes all the worry and complications out of treatment for a work or personal injury. From coordinating full-service medical treatment with a top medical professional, providers, and specialists to overseeing patient compliance and providing one-on-one personalized communications with clients. Healthmark Enterprises handles the entire treatment process for injured workers and those suffering personal injuries so they can just concentrate on getting better. Healthmark Enterprises believes that being injured should not limit one's access to great medical care. Now, more than ever, an injured person needs an advocate on their side. Contact Healthmark Enterprises at 215-563-1315. That's 215-563-1315. Healthmark Enterprises.